This week, we're joined by Derek Rucker, Mika Vekona, and Jesse Wagstaff as we preview the grand final. Let's talk some hardball. Welcome, everybody. I'm Liam Santamaria. No Grizzleman today, but we do have Fox Sports broadcaster, 1990 NBL MVP, and three-time All-NBL first-team guard, Mr. Derek Rucker. Ruck, thanks for jumping on for a chat.
No problem. Happy to join.
Sitting in on the Grizzle chair. As always, we've got our man BT in the box with the drops.
So, we meet again, Mr. Bond.
Bart, get out of my anchor chair.
Silence, octopussy.
What? What has that got to do with anything?
They're meeting again, Perth and New Zealand.
Perth and New Zealand.
Another Swiss NBL Grand Final series with these two.
Indeed. Ruck, Perth and New Zealand. You excited about this Grand Final matchup?
I am, and I'm sure a lot of people are kind of saying, here we go again, but I think this year will be slightly different, obviously with the competition being improved this season, and Perth are a different outfit. It's going to be really competitive. I'm not sure which way it will go yet.
We're going to break down the Grand Final series a little bit later. BT, you and I are going to chat, like I said off the top, to Mika Vekona and Jesse Wagstaff, two guys we don't hear a lot from. A lot of the time.
So two guys that will be key in this Grand Final series.
Indeed. Ruck, you've been following and calling the Illawarra-Perth series over the last week and a half. How you been enjoying calling the Swiss NBL Finals?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, I'm very fortunate to be able to do it, and it's something I really enjoy. And the games, you know, that series was very, you know, the home teams dominated.
Yep.
And Illawarra in game three just couldn't match Perth's intensity, and Perth were just so professional in game three. It was just very tough on them.
Let's start with Illawarra. Obviously an excellent effort by them this season. This is what Rob Beveridge had to say about his team following Friday night's game three loss.
Absolutely super proud of that, of our group. You know, it's like you know, you look at where the club was, you know, bottom of the ladder, six wins, finishing third place, one game off first or second place. I mean, that's pretty special. You know, it really is. And for us to achieve what we've achieved this year is amazing. And, you know, I know our players are really upset and disappointed that we, you know, probably didn't play the style that we wanted to. But right now I walk away with my head high, and I'm going to go over to the Wildcats bar across the road wearing my Illawarra top with pride. Simple as that.
Ruck, how do you grade their year now that all is said and done on them?
I agree entirely with Rob Beveridge. His comments were perfect. And, you know, he did a fantastic job. And, yeah, I'm sure the players were terribly disappointed after that game three loss because they just couldn't get into their rhythm and their flow. But you know, I was actually over in that bar where Bevo said he was going, and I had a good chat to him, and you know, I congratulated him on the season. He did a fantastic job. Certainly it wasn't a case of a moral victory, because I don't believe in those when it comes to pro sports, but you know, a great year from Illawarra, and I just love the style of basketball that they play.
Were the Wildcats fans in the bar as complimentary about Bevo?
They love him. They love him.
They still love him. I
thought they were, you know, they respect me. How could you not? I mean, and he's a good man also, and that's the thing. It's you know, you have to respect what he's done with Illawarra.
Plus, Perth had won as well, so they're probably feeling a little bit better about that.
Yeah.
We've got an early tweet that's come through from Daniel Coyne. Says, interesting comments by Bevo. Do you think he'll be back in the Gong next year?
I would think so. He's built something nice. Obviously, there's one job opening. I'm not sure if he has any interest in that, but he has a really good nucleus there. I'd say they're probably one player away from competing for a championship next year.
Is he the most important piece in terms of they've got to re-sign everybody thanks to that voluntary administration situation, that all on 1 year deals. Is Bevo the most important piece? Is he the first domino to fall for that team?
You know, his situation is very similar to Sean Dennis's up in Townsville. And, you know, all the players up in Townsville basically were basing their future on what was going to happen with SD. And I see Rob Bevers being very similar. You know, those guys are all about Bevo, and that's a credit to him. And that should be Illawarra's. That should be their first objective, to make sure he's stitched up, and then he can handle the players and get the crew that he wants.
Ruck, the Hawks had an import spot up their sleeve all year. There was some talk at one point of them possibly picking up Brian Conklin. Hey, King Kong. That's have been a long time since I heard that, BT. Ruck, with the benefit of hindsight, did they choose the right path in staying true to their roster?
I think they did, and it allowed some guys to play and get some minutes under Bevo's system.
Cody Ellis?
Yes, exactly. And I think next season, they could probably go with another import. And I don't think it has to be, you know, a high impact type import. You know, if finances are a concern, then they can probably get someone for the right dollar figure who fits the profile that they need. And I think they need someone who can get up on the rim. Just a real athletic type player. And that would, as I said, that would put them in the equation for being a real championship contender.
That's, you know, when the New Zealand missed the playoffs that year, Cedric Jackson wasn't in the team. Dean Vickerman's first year, he told me they went away that offseason and highlighted that kind of player for what they needed. They went out and got Akine Bekwe and felt, you know, got some extra kind of presence above the rim, some ability to finish, and some extra length and athleticism. And, well, we saw what that did for them. And then they followed that up with Charles Jackson. Is that the type of guy, like a backup to Ogilvy or a power forward center with that kind of makeup?
That's right. And, you know, Brian Conklin, I'm not sure he would be a good fit for that style, for their style, because he does need, he's a bit methodical the way he operates around the basket, and they're really a four out one in type team. And AJ is that one inside, but I think that they would really, really benefit from having you know, a real athlete, you know, Charles Jackson type. And it just it also allows them to throw a guy like that on Charles Jackson against the Wildcats. It gives them a foil to the Wildcats' bulk. The Wildcats are not athletic up front. They're just strong and big and experienced. But if you got a jumping jack who can just go up over the top of Jawai and Matt Knight and Redditch and those guys, and that changes things severely.
Let's talk about the Wildcats. What impressed you the most about them in their series versus Illawarra?
Their ability to defend at home.
Yep.
And, you know, I think I made a very blunt statement about Damian Martin, and I just said, look, if you don't respect and enjoy the way this guy plays, you're an idiot. And I mean, you saw the game.
Yep.
How could you not enjoy that and be inspired by that and just, you know, marvel at his ability to lead and what he's willing to sacrifice to ensure that his team gets to where it wants to. And I just thought he did a great job from the front.
It was such a series. The series was all about that battle of the tempo. And as you mentioned, each team was able to win that battle on their home court. What is it about home court advantage in the playoffs that helps in that way?
Well, this season it's been a constant theme right throughout the regular season. I think it's probably been the greatest disparity between home and away records. And
just ask Aaron Fern. Actually, don't. I did ask him about it, and it ruined my night.
But in the playoffs, it becomes extra tough because people are really locked in. And Perth do a great job out there at Perth Arena, and you know they're able to dictate the tempo through their defense, whereas Illawarra were able to do it down in Wollongong with their offense. And so it was a drastic type of series. But you know, now that we've got two really professional teams and play, they're not identical styles of play, New Zealand and Perth, but they're fairly similar. It's going to be one of these teams is going to crack at home, I think.
Well, let's hear from Trevor Gleeson, Perth Wildcats coach, on having the home court advantage in the Swiss NBL Grand Final series.
Yeah, well, they're all, you know, home court. You know, this is why we finished second four, and home court's been a good for us, and we've had some great battles with New Zealand this year, and look for another one Wednesday. But to get the crowd roaring and to feed off that emotion is a big asset for us.
Only two teams in the past 8 years have won without home court advantage. The second team, last year it was the Breakers in a best of three. Before that, it was the Tigers in a best of five, where that five-year period we had a best of five grand final series. So it happened a couple of times. Before that, it was the Adelaide 36ers in 98. So it doesn't happen a lot. Ruck, are New Zealand the best placed team to maybe win away from home considering their experience?
Well, I think they demonstrated that in game one of the semifinal series in Melbourne. They jumped Melbourne and really, you know, put a dagger through their soul early in that series and in that game. And nothing's really going to intimidate them. I don't think they're going to be worried about going into Perth in game one, and they'll give it everything they have in that initial game and try and steal it and end it in game two in New Zealand. I'm pretty sure that would be their strategy going into it. If he gets to a game three situation, then, you know, I am all in on Perth.
Right. Their ability to just lock down at home.
Yeah, and it's such an intimidating environment. Mm-hmm. And, I thought they got great calls the other night from the referees. I thought, that's not to knock any of the referees, but, I always said as a coach to my players, hey, refs, they're humans. They're not robots out
there.
And they're affected by the environment. Whether you subconsciously or consciously are aware of it, it happens. It's a real thing.
Ruck, BT just played some audio from Trevor Gleeson. It's a guy that doesn't get a lot of love sometimes. What have you thought of the job he's done this season?
Overall, you can't fault a winning coach.
Yep.
I've made comments at times that I probably would have managed Nate Jawai's minutes differently.
Okay.
But overall, I mean, he's got his team to another grand final.
Yep.
And I'm sure with respect to the love that he hasn't or has received, a lot of it probably is just his demeanor. Like, he's full-on serious about trying to win, and he gripes and he grizzles, and he's into it. You know, he's not a... he's a much different type of coach than, say, a Dean Demopoulos.
Right.
So I'm sure he doesn't garner a lot of love. But, you know, like I said, someone told me a long time ago, a good coach is a winning coach.
So sure.
The results speak for themselves.
You spoke before about these teams not being identical, but we have ended up with a grand final series involving the two teams in the league that are built around their defense and rebounding. And you hear it from their coaches and from their players all the time. Gleeson and Damian Martin, they always talk about how their defense is their backbone. Vickerman talks about how we built this team around defense and rebounding. We're guaranteed that one of them's going to win it, which means that these two teams will have shared this last seven championships in the league. Is that a coincidence?
No, it isn't. And, I mean, the Perth Wildcats are the most successful team in NBL history. And the New Zealand Breakers are the most successful team, you'd say, over the last decade.
Mm.
So it is great to have them in the grand final. But, you know, it's a cliche that defense wins championships.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the NBA right now, people are really getting the wrong idea about the Golden State Warriors. Everyone thinks, oh, wow, they score a lot of points. Well, yeah, they do. But the thing is, their defensive percentage is really good. Like, they're able to shut down people, especially when you need to. And that's the key. Can you get timely stops? And Golden State do a terrific job of that. Now, New Zealand and Perth don't have the offensive firepower, say, of an Illawarra or a Melbourne. Look at the teams that they just knocked out.
Yes, sir.
Illawarra and Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I'm building a team in the NBA, I'm going after rebounding and guys that want to defend like that naturally, instinctively feel the need to stop their man.
Two strengths of the Perth Wildcats and the New Zealand Breakers, who have met so many times in recent history in the Swiss NBL final series. The Breakers, of course, have won 4 out of the past 5 championships, 2 against the Perth Wildcats. Ruck, we have some exclusive audio here. This is Nick Marvin and Trevor Gleeson talking about coming up against Mika Vekona and the New Zealand Breakers again.
He's all wrong for us, baby. I saw you beat that man like I never saw no man get beat before. The man kept coming after you. We don't need that kind of man in our life. I know what you're feeling. Let it go. Let it go.
Wow, where did you get that, PT?
R.I.P. Tony Burton, a.k.a. Duke Apollo Creed's trainer.
Right.
That's fantastic.
Rest versus rust. What impact do you think Perth and New Zealand's vastly different preparations will have on this series?
Well, I can only go from a personal perspective, and I would not want to be sitting around 12 days waiting.
Yep.
That would drive me crazy, not only from a physical point of view, but mentally I would just be going nuts. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they decided to travel today and just get on, start to, you know,
Well,
that's a great move.
Yep.
And, you know, you expect nothing different from that organization. They're tapped in. They know what's going on. But going back to Mika Vekona, you know, I talked about before, I would want guys, if I was starting a team, I'd want guys that are committed to defense and rebounding. He's, in my opinion, he's one of the top 5 first choices I would take.
Right.
You know, if I'm starting a team, I'm trying to get him. I don't care how old he is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get him away from New Zealand, which is damn near impossible. But his value is so high.
Yep.
I mean, we watched him just totally destroy Daniel Kickert.
Yep. That opening 10 minutes in particular.
That was it. It was over for Daniel. And, you know, that's not to discredit Daniel. He's a fantastic player. But sometimes when you face a guy who is hard and tough and knows how to get it done, you know, it's going to be a learning lesson. And, wow, that was fantastic.
Let's talk about the grand final schedule for a sec. It's potentially 3 games in 5 days, which is pretty full on, especially when you're flying between Perth and New Zealand. Is it just a matter of it being the same for both teams, or do you think it plays to one of their advantage?
Well, seeing how New Zealand had to take that initial trip over,
mm-hmm.
I would say that it slightly favors Perth.
Yep.
Especially as, you know, when it comes down to getting game one. But, you know, like we just mentioned, New Zealand getting over there nice and early will give them time to get their body clocks in place, because I always found as a player, and even the other day when I traveled over there, you know, I was up at 5 a.m.
Right.
You know, once again, the key to being a successful sportsman is keeping that mind at ease and not letting it race too much. And,
yep.
You know, it's the more idle time you have, the more your mind races and you start thinking and thinking. And when you're up at 5 a.m., man, it's tough. You know, you'd like to sleep until 8:30, and, you know, there's a lot of things you can't do when you're up at 5 a.m. other than just walk around your hotel.
There has been a bit of talk about, like, the time difference, but it's 5 hours different for the Breakers.
Yeah, it's significant. Anything over 3 hours is major.
Yes.
And 5 hours for the Breakers is big. I'm serious. I flew in. The game was Wednesday. I flew in Tuesday. I got in there about 3 p.m. to Perth, and I was sleepy by 8 p.m. Prince is going on across as people screaming and yelling outside. And I was up at 4:30.
Wow.
That's early.
Yep. Well, they've got a few days to get themselves right.
Now, we've had another tweet that's come through from NBL Dream Team. Who'll get more flop warnings, Perth with Redditch or New Zealand with Charles Jackson, who set the record for fouling out?
Can foul.
Well, Charles Jackson really in the second half of the season has run into foul trouble problems. I mean, that's the reason why Vickerman and Hanari decided to put him on the bench. And some people thought it was due to form, and that was not it. It was to protect him from himself.
They did it last year with Ibekwe as well, effectively.
Yeah, and I think one of the playoff games, I believe, Jackson, did he foul out like in 6.5 minutes?
A record.
Yes, game one in Melbourne.
And yeah,
ones too, like the ones at the rim, you know, where he's not necessarily vertical and he gets that call, okay, but when he gets tangled up on guys trying to get, you know, position and whatnot, like he needs to mature in that way because he's missing out on a lot of playing time. And as a pro, he's missing out on a lot of numbers.
You're right, Liam, and it's you know, those are business things.
Yes,
know?
Sir.
You've got to learn, but that points me back to what I was going to say is, with him, it's just a maturity thing, and it's emotional. Like, if you watch him, he is highly emotional. And he just gets so revved up in the game that all those fouls are just impulsive reactions. And, I mean, you saw the play over in New Zealand in game two where he, like, had the ball and he kicked it out to, I think it was someone on the three-point line, maybe Abercrombie or something, and he went sprinting down
yes.
the other end.
Yep.
Like, you know, he did a Warriors-type celebration yes. before this ball was even released.
Yes, he was Ibira on someone else's shot.
I mean, fortunately, the shot went in for
yes.
him. But that's how he is, man. He's really, really emotional. He's had a really good season. But in these finals, they're going to need him to be under control and not commit stupid fouls.
Well, let's talk about each of these teams and their individual, you know, what they're going to get from each guy. Let's look at some of the matchups. Start with the point guard one, the headline matchup for mine, Damian Martin versus Cedric Jackson. Cedric's been a man possessed over the past month. He's a two-time grand final MVP, including once against Perth in 2013. Obviously, as we know, we've got five-time defensive player of the year, Damian Martin. Is this the key matchup of the series?
I believe so, because if Damian Martin is able to contain Cedric Jackson, disrupt him enough to make it very difficult for Cedric to get into the key, then that significantly impacts New Zealand, and it will make it hard for them to put points on the board.
Except that Cedric's a knockdown shooter now, all of a sudden.
I know.
What is going on there?
It kind of started, I think, in that Adelaide game
yes.
where he to make 7 threes?
Yep, 7 of 13.
Yeah.
He's hardly missed
it.
Since.
Yeah.
Step backs.
I mean, he's hitting everything. But you know what? Despite that, I'm still going to challenge him to go ahead
yep.
and knock those down. I'd much rather him take those shots than his backcourt partner, Corey Webster, getting good touches.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about Corey then and his matchup with Jermaine Beal. Two guys who can go missing at times a little bit, but can also be legitimate game winners at the offensive end, both in pretty good form. Is this a wash for you?
I think I like Dollar Beal just slightly.
Okay.
I think his physical ability and his size will allow him to hang with Corey and really make things difficult when they are matched up. Now, from Corey's point of view, he needs to be patient and stay within the system and not get frustrated when Beal is on him, because there will come a time in the game when he won't have Beal on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when he'll need to be aggressive. Not that he doesn't need to be aggressive when Beal's on him, but he can afford to push it a little bit more and chance his arm when the Beal matchup isn't in front of him. So mm-hmm. if he gets
he might get a bit of Greg higher. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
If he gets a higher, or even if Martin goes over him, he'll have the ability to shoot over the top of Damian.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think that's when he really needs to push it and try and get some points on the board.
The small forward spot, Casey Prather versus Thomas Abercrombie. You and I chatted yesterday a little bit about this moment.
And Prather back into the open court. Overby went with the hard foul. And Prather elevated and threw it down.
How nasty was that dunk over AJ Ogilvie to watch live and in person?
Man, just the sound of the ball going through the basket and the contact. And the roar of the crowd, it was an unforgettable moment, and so timely, given all that had transpired between AJ Ogilvie and Casey Prather during the game. I don't know if you remember, but even the second play of the game when Prather came down in transition and got an and one, he and AJ collided then on that play.
Okay.
So it had kind of been going on throughout the whole game, and then obviously AJ was antagonized when he went forehead to forehead with Prather.
Mm-hmm. But, so can I have this dance?
Yeah. Whoa, you talk about some revenge, and
yes,
that just blew the lid off the building, and that's for me, I think that's the dunk of the year. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Especially the moment.
Yeah, the moment, the situation, I loved it. Prather and Abercrombie, how important have these two guys been in the success of their teams this season?
When Prather plays and he's healthy, the Wildcats rarely lose. And when you combine that with the fact when they're at home, they're very, very hard to beat. You know, I think he's one of the most unique players in the competition. He's efficient. He shoots the ball better than you think. He can get to the rim. And as Shane Hill said, his Euro step is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. He said it was the best in the league. I wasn't sure. I like Josh Childress's Euro step.
Really?
Mm.
Interesting. Yeah, Shane said it. I think I like Prather's, but you know, Childress is pretty damn good too.
Yep.
And Childress is so long. It's like you know, you give him just a slight opening and he's up on the rim.
Yep.
But I like Prather in this matchup. I'm not sure that Abercrombie may have the strength to stay with Prather's penetration.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be surprised if I was Perth. I wouldn't be surprised if they put a little bit of if they try and get a situation where Prather has to go up against Corey Webster a bit,
just okay,
to put pressure on Corey and make Corey defend.
Okay, guard him. And if that means that Jermaine Beal's playing time on Abercrombie, you'd be looking for Abercrombie to be aggressive, rise up, shoot over him from the mid range.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would even move Beal to the one, move Prather to the two, and you know, give Damian a little bit of rest, and then that way you force Webster to have to guard Prather.
Okay, I like that.
Good strength from Wagstaff. Gets himself open for three. Big offensive rebound. Matt Knight fouled and one.
Offensive rebound again.
Matty Knight and Mika Vekona. We're going to chat to Mika about this matchup a little bit later on. Can you call this one for either guy?
Man, it's tight, isn't it?
Yep.
This is a wash. Now, this one I'll give you, it is a wash. I'm not willing to go either way. You know, I really respect and love the way both guys handle their business. Matt Knight is different than Daniel Kickard, obviously. He has more experience at this stage of the season. He's physically strong, and no one's going to intimidate him.
Not even Mika.
No.
All right. Well, speaking of intimidation, Nate Jauai. Obviously, he'll be starting the game against Pledger. You'd imagine Gleeson would be kind of go at him early and often with that matchup. You think Jauai's back in his comfort zone with this New Zealand matchup after that semifinal series against Illawarra?
Well, I'm sure he'll be happy to get away from Illawarra because they were sending people at him left and right, and Nate had a very poor series. He wasn't able to finish around the basket. And Illawarra did a good job also of harassing him enough that he wasn't able to pass out of the post effectively either. And I'm not sure. I'd imagine New Zealand may just go straight up with when Pledger is defending him and let Pledger handle him. That's going to be an interesting matchup. I like Nate to bounce back in this series against Pledger, although I think Jackson might give Nate some problems.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how much they play.
Yeah.
I mean, how much Charles Jackson's going up against Jervis, which brings us to the bench. I mean, Redditch, Wagstaff, Jervis on the one hand, and then you've got guys like Tarangi, Ty Wesley, who's in excellent form, and Charles Jackson on the other hand. I mean, how important is bench production in this series, and can you give an edge either way here?
Well, Jesse Wagstaff came in Game 3, and provided valuable points, you know, after he and Heyer hadn't scored in the first two games.
Mm.
So it looks like, you know, he may have found his rhythm again. I'm going to give the bench slightly to Perth once again. I just feel that they have a few, they have a one or two more bodies that they can throw into the mix. You know, Jarrod Kinney is a better backup option than anything that New Zealand can provide.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, having the two games at home allows those role players, and role players always play better at home.
Yep.
It allows those guys an extra bite if it gets to a game three to excel and make a difference in the series. So I guess the way I've said it, man, I think I'm kind of liking Perth.
I know. I was about to say, if you pick New Zealand after we've got you've given the edge to Perth bit by bit, but yeah, sounds like you're heading that way.
And the final matchup, Gleeson Vickerman, any advantage there?
Oh man. No. No advantage.
The emotion for Vickerman? The guy's kind of doing it for Dean a little bit?
Look, they both get fired up. I went to a New Zealand training session, shoot-around session up in Townsville earlier in the year, and I was really surprised. I think of Dean as a mild-mannered guy.
Yep.
I was really surprised and impressed how he was on his guys' backsides during shoot-around. Like, there was no messing around. He was on them. He wasn't on them to the Dean Demopoulos level, but he was...
Oh, here comes BT's favorite drop.
I think that one's just a close call. And, you know, players ultimately decide this thing. And both those coaches have done fantastic jobs, not only this season, but during their careers.
Yep. Well, so close. In each of those individual matchups and then collectively. All right, final opportunity now. Give us your tip. How many games?
I'd give a tip.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And grand final MVP. Larry Sengstock, stock medalist.
Okay. Perth in three games.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to win game three by 8 points.
Okay. All right.
The Larry Sengstock medalist is going to be, for his second one,
ooh,
Jermaine Beal.
Okay.
Ooh.
Wow. You like Dollar Beal to get off.
He's going to rise up in that matchup against Corey Webster.
Okay. BT?
Well, I think it's definitely going to three, and in that case, it's very, very hard to go past Perth, so I won't. I'll go Casey Prather.
Okay.
MVP.
All right.
That's
well,
fair enough.
I'm picking Perth in three. I think it's going to be home court all the way. And I'm picking Damian Martin. I reckon there might be a little kind of... I think there's a little extra edge to Damo after not getting the Best Defensive Player Award. those... And I think that there's also there'll be a little bit of kind of extra emotion in terms of choosing him by whoever's voting because, everyone feels a little bit sorry that he doesn't have any silverware this year.
I like your thinking because we were all at the NBL Awards dinner and I was sitting next to the New Zealand table and I just kept my eye on them. And remember, that was the night before game one.
Yes.
Of the semifinals, and I just kept watching Sed Jackson as all those awards were being announced,
uh-huh.
And he wasn't able to get out of his seat, and the brother was not happy. I can tell you that right away. And I asked him about that after game one,
mm-hmm.
And he played it down, but
yep.
The little smile that he gave me
mm-hmm.
indicated that he was switched on, and I'm sure he's still. Ready. He's still trying to prove a point, man.
That could be a potential Larry Sengstock medalist we might be overlooking. He's done it twice before.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, it's not
certainly.
Like he doesn't know what it takes.
Exactly. Ruck, thanks so much for helping us break it down. We're going to chat with BT and I are going to chat with Jesse Wagstaff and Mika Vakona, but thank you so much for going right through it with a fine-tooth comb with us. Are you calling any of these games?
Yes, I am. I'll have game one and... If it goes to three, I'll have game three in Perth.
All right.
Hey, thanks for having me on throughout the season. You guys do a fantastic job, and the NBL is very happy to have a nice podcast run by you guys.
Thanks, my man. Thanks, back right back at you. You've been doing an exceptional job on the broadcast, and good luck in the grand final.
Thanks, guys.
Former NBL Rookie of the Year, Best Six Man, two-time champion, Jesse Wagstaff. Thanks so much for jumping on for a chat so early on your Sunday morning.
No worries. It's a pleasure.
In fact, speaking of early rising on a Sunday morning, Damian Martin said that you in the mornings, you've had a paddleboard, you've done some yoga, you've unpacked an IKEA flat pack by the time his alarm goes off. He says this dates back to your Mike Dunlap days, 5 a.m. workouts. What's going on there?
That was a bit of a stretch this morning. We actually set my alarm, but
okay, yeah, no, set your alarm for the podcast. Wow,
yeah, no, it's dedication. But look, now that's what we used to get up pretty early at Metro back in the day. But just as a side note, he's actually been playing my missus in backgammon for about 45 minutes this morning, so he doesn't tell the whole truth. And what? Losing, mind you, and losing.
Wow,
actual board game and backgammon, or like on a phone.
Yeah, on a phone. He's been he's played a couple of games, lost all of them, just so everyone knows that.
Were you a little bit sus when you first discovered that your wife was playing backgammon with Damian Martin via phone early in the morning?
Roll over.
And then when she said it was backgammon, you're like, yeah, backgammon, sure, yeah.
No, I've checked.
Okay. Actually, before we talk some hoops, I've heard that you have a hobby of making board games. What's the story there?
Well, contestants run upstairs and they get a clue.
Upstairs, downstairs.
These rumours that are flying. Now, look, we...
Do you make board games?
I went to the States, and the Mrs. family is kind of like the Brady Bunch, and they have a little family heirloom board game, so I had to do the good husband thing, and I came back and made one, and then okay. I thought it'd be a good little Christmas present for some of the boys and their wife, so I... made one of them for them as
How
well.
How does it play out? Is it, you know, do you pick up cards? What happens?
Dice?
What?
Nah, it's pretty much trouble. It's a trouble with a few holes in it, and a piece of wood, a few holes, and it's pretty much trouble.
Oh, my God, I want one.
It's not exactly too complicated.
I think if you win the championship series, you should release it as a limited edition.
I like it.
Everything sells once you've won a grand final.
And you know what? Everything sells out of that Perth Wildcats shop.
Yes.
They line up around the block for those bobbleheads.
They need stuff to buy.
Yep.
I'll put a Wildcat emblem right in the middle.
That'll get it done.
All right, let's talk some actual hoops. Congrats on the win on Friday night. What was the feel amongst the team heading into Game 3? Was there a bit of anxiety given it was a do-or-die situation?
Oh, look, I don't think anxiety. I think, you know, credit to Wollongong. They played fantastic at their place and really gave it to us and, you know, got us by 20. And I think we were just excited. You know, we weren't exactly... you know, happy with the way we played. Mm. And so it was just nice to get back on the court and put a solid performance together against what should be a pretty good series against New Zealand.
BT, the Perth boys are still calling them Wollongong. Jesse, yes. They're done. You've
like
beaten them.
Clay.
You don't need to lay those low blows anymore.
Mate, I've been around for too long to just change in one year.
Jesse, you're a guy who could be starting and playing a more prominent role on plenty of other teams across the league. What is it about your situation with the Wildcats that works for you?
Well, look, I don't think it's all about starting. I think we've got a couple of blokes on the bench who could start, you know, in other places. You look at even like Jared Kenny. Jared Kenny started pretty much for the first 10 games because of injuries to Damo. You got Shawnee, you got Greg, you got Tommy. I think, you know, either one of them could start as well. And, you know, it's not all about starting. It's about being in a successful program and... Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's other things than just starting.
Yep.
Well, speaking of the bench, how important will bench production be for both teams in this series, considering the starting lineups are so evenly matched?
Yeah, huge. You know, I think we both teams pride ourselves on depth. You look at New Zealand, and they've got some considerable depth as well. So, you know, it will be important. And, you know, let's hope that our bench can perform well.
Absolutely. The Perth bench, you guys get together and huddle up before every opening tip. Mm. Are you guys a bit of a team within the team?
Yeah, you look in most times of practice, it's usually the benches versus starters. And, you know, we take a bit of pride in that. And, you know, that huddle's just to get our mind focused and, you know, just to, you know, zero in on what we've got to do.
Is that Greg Heyer? Is he the most vocal in that huddle?
Yeah, he usually takes that and just has a few wise words for us. And, you know,
is it always the same?
Half time as well.
Did he change it up?
If it was the same every week, I just wouldn't listen. No, he changes it up.
Jesse, you've been in some excellent form this season. You played great on Friday night.
Wagstaff, deep in the corner. He gets himself going with the three.
Well, he's got himself going with the three a number of times this season, but you've been a little quiet against the Breakers in your past three games against them. Are you ready to knock a few down on Wednesday night?
Thanks for telling me that. I didn't even know that.
Well, you put 14 points in your first game against them early in the season before Corey Webster showed up and they got rolling. But have you found, like, is it a matchup that, I mean, you've played them so many years, so many times over the years, and the teams have stayed relatively similar. But do you feel comfortable playing against them?
Yeah, look, as I said, we obviously play them four times every year, and then you add to the playoff game start. Yeah, look, you feel comfortable, and you know it's not all about points. Sometimes you go out there, and that's what you need to do. Other times you're dollar feeling it, or someone else is going, and you don't really need to put the points on the board. So it's whatever's asked of me.
You're likely going to play some pretty significant minutes this series against Ty Wesley, who's been in some terrific form of late. Have you been watching any tape of his post moves?
Dizzy.
He's phenomenal on the low block. I think he's one of the best in the league. He takes his time. He's patient. He's strong. So he'll definitely be a weapon for them. And as you said, he's been in some pretty good form, especially against Melbourne.
Jesse, excluding yourself, who's your tip for grand final MVP? Should probably pick a Wildcat.
To win the grand final. I'll say that definitely up. That's a tough one.
There you go.
I think
they're smoky.
I'm gonna sit on the fence here. I'm gonna say Damo. I think it could, he's the type of guy that can have such an effect on the game without scoring. But in saying that, he's not the type of bloke to get the MVP because he doesn't put mega points on the board. So I'm going to go with Casey.
Casey? BT? Yeah. You picked Casey, didn't you pick Casey?
I did.
Yes.
He's my pick as well.
Ah, very nice.
Jesse, thank you so much for jumping on. You can go and have some breakfast now.
Play some backgammon.
play some upstairs down. No, some trouble.
Yeah.
What a riveting life I lead.
Mate, thanks again and good luck for the grand final series.
No worries, guys. Thanks a lot.
Five-time NBL champion, the captain, the heart and soul of the New Zealand Breakers, Mika Vakaina, thanks so much for jumping on for a chat.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Mika, you guys are literally in the airport lounge right now preparing to fly over to Perth. Rob Beveridge said the other day he likes the look in the eye of the New Zealand Breakers. What's the feel amongst the group heading over to Perth?
Yeah, I mean, the guys are pretty confident. I think we're just grateful to be at this point of the season.
Mm-hmm.
We're really, really looking forward to it. Sitting back for about a week and a bit, trying to figure out who we're going to play. I think all the guys are on edge.
Yep.
And then to finally find out after Friday night, there's a little bit of calm and we just want to get to work.
Take us behind the scenes of the Breakers at the airport lounge. Who's chilling with who? We got anybody playing some cards?
No one's got cards. I've got a big TV screen here, or a big theatre in the Quiru lounge here. So most of the guys are in there just watching some rugby and
of course,
playing on some PlayStation. So, yeah,
very
just
nice.
Taking it easy.
That's right. The Super Rugby season's kicked off.
Yep, that's right.
Now, obvious question of rest versus rust. How has the break helped you guys, do you think?
Good. Real good, actually. We got into it slowly at the start of the week. And, just to refresh the bodies, but mostly our minds. Everybody just mentally was able to refresh us from that, the last month and a half. It would have been intense, but at the same time, the coaches were very aware of that. And then towards Wednesday, Thursday, then Friday, we were pretty intense in our training. So, I think everything's planned out pretty well. And, looking forward just to getting over to Perth.
You spoke about that last month and a half. At one point, you guys were on a six-game losing streak towards the end of January, and you're looking up a steep hill towards the top four. Does it amaze you how quickly that turned around and where you are now?
I think we've got a lot of guys in the team that understand how the league works anything can happen.
Yep.
We knew the processes and what the coaches had implemented for us would work. It was just us all getting on the same wavelength. And, we believed through that whole process. It was a big learning curve for us during the six-game streak. But, the guys never, lost any confidence. And then we just knew if we could get on a roll, good things would happen. And, it's happened so far.
It's kind of a wacky regular season for you guys. It was a tough start without Corey. And then when he returned, things just got rolling. And then around Christmas, things went awry, and then that's where January was rough. What changed for you guys around that time?
We started moving the ball offensively during that six-game period. I think everybody tried a little bit too much to try and steady the ship, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But that Christmas period is dangerous for all teams.
Yep.
I think if you go across the league, if you can come through that unscathed or come out of it pretty healthy, you're going to look pretty good. We just happened to take the harder road towards it.
The scenic route.
Yeah, there you go. holiday time, I guess. Everybody got caught up in the Christmas period. But, but like I said, we understood what we had in the system and the culture of the group, and we knew if we just stayed with it, good things would happen.
That first quarter of game one against Melbourne, what was your personal mindset going into that opening tip at Hisense Arena?
Didn't want to take it back. That was it, really. You had to come out and just make sure you won that game, because we had a feeling if we could take it back home, it could be give us a great chance of sealing it off. So it was just more coming in and just making sure, we were all focused and just knowing that we had to come out and just win that first game right from the start.
Is that what you feel you're going to have to do at the Jungle to really silence the crowd so they don't get on top of you?
Yeah, yes, definitely. That crowd is pretty ruthless out there, If you're making any sort of mistake, they're going to make you know about it. So the quieter they are, the better it is for us.
And then is Perth more than most the one team you feel can match your intensity?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that goes with us just meeting each other in the playoffs and just during the season so many times, I think it's not the comfort, but just not the personnel, they know us, you have that mutual respect across the board, and it's just that time where you just want to go out and just hammer things out.
Mika, there are two teams in this league who are built around their defense and rebounding, and after this series combined, they'll have won every one of the past seven championships. What should people be learning from that?
It's not a new thing. I mean, all basketball players have said it in the past, but defense wins championships, and if you can base that around most teams and you can build that and build everything around it, I think that goes a long way to creating a successful organization or a club.
Do you think, kind of with that in mind, you find it surprising that you've got other teams around the league, like the two other teams that were in the playoffs who seem to have built their team around their offense, and they've tried to add their defense and rebounding throughout the season? Does that surprise you?
No, not really. I mean, every team's going to try and find a new way to win.
Yep.
But I guess we've got a method that we believe in.
Yep.
I guess a blueprint, and we're going to keep doing that until it dries up, I guess. And then until somebody else comes out with something new, everybody, we're going to continue doing this. It's like the triangle offense back in the 90s, That was a godsend for the Bulls, and they continued doing that offensively, but they had things in terms of defense and structures and the right personnel in it. So, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, for sure. Keep going to the well. It's getting the job done.
Yeah, exactly. And, it's just something that we're confident in. And as coming down into the postseason, you need all the confidence you can get.
Yep.
So when you have that, it helps out a lot.
You're going to play a lot of minutes this series matched up against Matty Knight. What's your scout on him, and what are the keys for your success against him?
He's a machine, mate. he's one of those blue-collar guys who just goes in and just works his ass off. He's got the inside game, and he's added that outside jumper, 12, 15 feet, which he's consistently banging, And you just got to watch out for those turnaround bankers and just him just crashing the boards. I think he's one of those leaders this year for them that have really stood up and made sure that, he's going to lead by his actions, and he's been doing that. So there's a lot of respect out to him and the way he plays, and, just trying to not out-muscle him, but just play him, sensibly, and just try and limit those shots he has and box him out.
That could have been Matty Knight talking about Mika Vekona. Because your mid-range game, we were talking about this last week. You've been working hard on that over the last 12, 18 months, haven't you? It's coming along. You feeling good with it?
Yeah, I think I've been working for the last 12 to 18 years, mate. it's something that you try and improve. I mean, I've always never tried to get too, I guess, stressed out about the shot. If it's there, you know, sometimes you can just feel it. If it's there, it's there, you take it.
You never try and
force a situation.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works and sometimes it's the right decision, but and sometimes it's not. But it's just something that I've always, I guess, ethos that I've always gone by. But it's something that, you know, I'm always working on and always trying to make sure that you're not become one-dimensional to other teams.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm.
If you guys win the title, you'll join some pretty elite company as the only players to have played in 6 NBL championships. David Stiff and your former teammate, CJ Bruton. Do you care about writing your name in record books like that? I mean, do those types of things motivate you at all?
No, to be honest with you, no, not really. I mean, the thing I get satisfaction out is that of those 2 players that he mentioned, you know, I've been able to rub shoulders with and actually try and soak up as much information as possible from those kind of players. You know, I've been blessed to be able to play with CJ Bruton, you know, Tony Ronaldson, you know, Dylan Boucher, Paul Henare, you know, through the Breakers. And then you got Gorgian. I mean, it's all the players and the people that you get to, again, associate and play with along the way, you know. To me, that means most to me because, you know, you can sit back, you know, with a cold one with somebody and say, look, this is what I learned from this legend, you know, or this is another thing they learned from another legend, you know. Rather than trying to show your rings off, you can actually say, look, this is how I became the player that I became because of these guys, you know. So I think that's where the satisfaction for me comes from.
I reckon one of those other legends you'll be having a cold one and talking about down the track is Cedric Jackson. he has an ability here to make an historic kind of statement in winning another championship every single season he's been in the league. Mm. What have you seen in him over the past month, you know, starting with that game in Adelaide, apart from step back threes?
I was about to say, yeah, those step back threes are just killer. It's just his leadership, you know. The great thing about the Breakers is that we have a great leadership group, you know, guys that have stuck together and made sure everybody else is held accountable for their actions. And, you know, Sid leads that for us, you know. His intensity going into games, just the way he's able to lead as a leader, you know, there's a lot asked of as a point guard, and he does a great job of that, you know, setting the tone for us, you know, just the way he talks, the way he organises everybody. And, you know, the guy hates losing. He hates losing at everything. And that's pretty, you know, everybody feeds off that. So when you have somebody that's leading you from the front like that, it's pretty contagious.
Last question, Mika.
Why he's wearing, and that's why he keeps winning.
Yeah, you know? Yep. Last question. We had Vico on for a chat a couple of weeks ago before the start of the finals. And was that? Actually, I can't remember when it was. And he said he was talking about who you guys would like to play in the grand final. Actually, he said this in a post-game presser. And he said that there's some guys in the camp who are thinking, oh, you know, we haven't beaten Illawarra, Kirk, you know, it'd be good to play them. And there are other guys, oh, well, you know, the rivalry with Perth, you know, it'd be good to play them. Which camp did you fall into?
I was more in the Illawarra
camp,
you know. I mean, I want to go against them. We hadn't won against them all season, you know. Mm-hmm. I wanted to take that team and just make sure, you know, look, if we're going to win the championship, it'd be nice to have one against every team in the league, you know.
Yep.
But saying so, Perth is also great rivalry, and it's something that I really wanted as well. But it was more for selfish reasons rather than anything else, but yeah.
Did you have a backcourt terror screen waiting for Kirk Penny?
Maybe. he's had enough of those during the talkback camp. So.
Sure. Well, Mika, hey, thanks so much for giving some time for a chat in the airport lounge. There's other things. There's rugby to watch, and you're chatting to us. We appreciate it. Good luck for the grand final.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.